was like the Johnny Carson show.
That's what we're going for here.
Here's Bob.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Reginald Roundtree, co-anchor of 10 News on Tampa Bay's CBS affiliate, WTSP. Stick around. We're live at Elevate Fitness, 6001 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I've got a lot of people looking over my shoulder right now, daring me to screw it up with Reggie. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 1,000 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening and viewing pleasure. At a time when some people believe local news shows may be a bit ubiquitous and that the cast of characters is a little interchangeable, Reginald Roundtree is a dean of Tampa Bay's broadcast news scene, coming up on a remarkable 25 years on staff at WTSP. But who is this man of great calm and legendary cool? Would you believe he's a former cop? It's true. Reggie, who's a native Floridian, born in Daytona Beach, grew up in Miami, where he eventually spent 6 years as a city police officer. He was even recognized there with an Officer of the Year Medal of Valor. He eventually joined the news operation at WPEC-TV in West Palm Beach before landing in Tampa Bay almost a quarter of a century ago. Now, a few more quick bits of information about our Mr. Roundtree. He is frequently out and about in the Bay Area, posting Facebook selfies of himself playing a round of golf at community fundraisers or maybe just patronizing local restaurants. And check his Twitter account, and you'll find him messaging other Bay Area media celebs, such as Bubba the Love Sponge. Reginald Roundtree, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I have lots of questions for you. But you and Bubba?
The interesting thing is, I've known Bubba for almost 24 years. And there are two sides to him. The side that probably 99% of the community knows as the ferocious, controversial, just anything's within the realm. And then there's the other side when the microphone light goes out, there's that other person that you would be shocked to find is courteous, sweet, caring. Well, wait a minute, how does that mix? As a matter of fact, I was talking with him this morning. I'll tell you how it all went down. When I first got here, I was listening to him, and he was on the station as it used to be the Power Pig, 93.3. Mm-hmm. So I was like, who is this madman on the radio? He's just nuts. But during that time, he was doing more music and less talk. So I called in. I said, you know what? You play all of the tunes I love. And he's, who is this? Reggie at Channel 10. Bam, hung up the phone. I says, he is pompous. I like this guy. I called him back. I said, really? It's Reggie at Channel 10. I'm right down the block, and their studios were right on Gandhi. And he says, really? He says, the news guy. I says, yeah. But I listened to you, your show, and we developed a friendship after that. It's been 24, 25 years. And if he is probably the most controversial radio talk show guy, I think, in the nation, nothing is off limits. I mean, he'll go do something really wild, and you're like, oh, my. And then he'll come and do something like with the Jackson House, the old historic piece of African-American history there, where the likes of Billie Holiday, Martin Luther King, you go down the list, James Brown, they all roomed there when there was segregation, and that was the one place where they were housed and where they could go. And it's, you know, it's come under disrepair and everything, and it's about to fall and everything. And he raised $100,000 to try to save this piece of Tampa Black history. And the controversy that went in with that, his battles with the mayor, and they cut the deal, and then they reneged. And so he's into a lot of crazy things, and people always have an opinion about him. But he's also into things that matter and care. And you're like, who is, what slice of bubble am I getting this time? But, you know, he's good at what he does. He's good at what he does.
I like him. I mean, I do.
I like people that speak their mind. We may not agree. We may be on a different page. But I think it enriches us as people to get varying opinions where you think you're locked into something. Then all of a sudden you hear from the third and fourth party and you're, well, yeah, you know what? I can kind of understand why you're thinking that way, because we all grew up in different areas of the country and different parents, different religions or whatever. But I think once you can find some common ground, which I'm very good at, I can find common ground with anyone if we sit down and talk. And I think that's probably what the problems of the entire world or this nation with the bickering in Washington. I'm done with it. I'm sick of talking about it. Fine. You get 50%, give you 50%, and let's work a deal. Everything's up for negotiations.
Lindsay, I really do hate to interrupt, but Mason Dixon is on line two. He wants to know why you're not listening to his show.
I love Mason.
That's not the truth. The real reason you stay in touch with Bubba is that it's the former cop in you. You're just keeping him under surveillance.
I tell you what, if anyone ever kept him under surveillance for 24 hours, that would probably be a reality show. Easily, it could be a reality show.
All right, so let me ask you a more serious question about media. Is there any sense of community in the Bay Area in terms of the media? I can
speak from my station, and since I've been here, I learned something that I never turned down an opportunity to go and do something or to participate. I've been to probably 100 different schools in every county you can name of to speak to kids. I've done a number of charity fundraisers with everything from AIDS to breast cancer to, you know, you name it across the board, because I feel that that's my way. And we at the station at 10 News, we make it a point for our folks to get out and get involved. I feel like I'm giving back in some form or fashion. And I've done a number of events where they tried to slip me a check, you know, and I'm like, oh, no, we want to pay you for your time. I'll go in and endorse it and give it.
Can you give me the day and time that you're doing one of those? I could just kind of stand off to the side, accept the check, and you could sign it over to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of what, among the media community, I mean, if you were at some kind of social event and Kelly Ring came over and invited you to dance, would you accept, or would you say, "Oh no, you're the competition"?
I would go and dance. As a matter of fact, I'm going to show you something. I played in the Michelin golf tournament for Joshua House, which is up at World Woods. Which, if there are any golfers in here, that's like golf heaven. I mean, they look like they cut the grass with scissors. I mean, it's immaculate. Now, I'm going to show you a picture, and you can show to our audience of the competition, Reggie in the competition. And I saw her out on... I have two phones. You have to. I mean, this is the way news and media has come. I mean, I can do so many things with...
That one's an iPhone. What's this one?
Android? I want to show you this picture. And you tell me...
I mentioned the brand of the other phone.
You tell me who it is when you see this picture. And I took it with... And she's with the competition. But I think she's an absolutely wonderful, adorable person. Stacy.
Oh, okay.
And I walked up to her and said, "Hey, let's take a picture." "Really?" "Absolutely. I got it right there." I said, no, I'm going to put you on my Facebook page. And then she said, what are you going to say? It's all good. It's all good. But I'm just that way. I don't look at other anchors or other reporters as my competition, even though it may, you know, we're after ratings and doing well. But, you know, they're just colleagues to me, you know, and I get along with everybody.
So the reason I asked you this was, I don't really care if you guys are interested in it or not, but, I mean, I've been writing and reporting in this area for 30 years,
long time.
No one has shown me the secret handshake in the media community yet. So I just want to point out that if there's a community, I apparently have been excluded. Podcasters get no respect, no respect at all. You were born in Daytona Beach,
Florida. My mother was attending Bethune-Cookman College at the time. God bless her. She passed 10/13/10. Those dates you just keep in your brain.
It had to be tens.
10/13/10.
I mean, is there anything you do that doesn't have a 10 involved?
I don't know what it is.
You
it's
mean,
just
you pass that
it's
to your
just,
mother?
It's just
right.
that number. But anyway, she. She was the first in the family to attend college, and she chose Bethune-Cookman College and went to school there. And I was actually born, I think, in her her fourth year of college. Worked two jobs, went to school full time, and maybe got. She told me during those years she maybe got 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, and would read by candlelight her studies and everything. Well, anyway, she went on to get her bachelor's degree. Then we moved to New York for a period of time where she went and obtained her master's degree in education from Hunter's College. Now, it was an interesting part. While she was at Hunter's College in New York, she sang with the Metropolitan Opera.
Wow.
We're talking about a little old country girl from Bartow, Florida, singing in the New York Met. So she had an incredible voice, a beautiful voice, but she was really drawn to education, which made it really difficult for me coming up as a child, because when your mother's a teacher, you don't skate with anything, which I didn't like as a child. But once you become a man, you become an adult, you say, oh, God, thank God I had a mother like that. That was just, you know, and she was so good at, you know, in my teens, I was a little wild. Wild, I guess. She was so good at catching me that we nicknamed her, my cousin and I, nicknamed her Mannix. Remember Mannix?
My cop.
She was that good. We could not pull anything.
Wow.
Put anything by her. God bless her.
And father?
Father was a big, brawny, 6'4". I lost the height part. 220-pound country boy from Lake City, Florida. One traffic light. He was a laborer. He worked in a butcher shop when we were in New York, in the Bronx. And it's funny, you know, my father taught me a lot of things, but he taught me how to pick out a good steak. You always want to get the ribeye. I said, well, why the ribeye? He says, because of the veins of fat that run through, and when you cook it properly, they explode into flavor, and it just makes it, you know. And he was a wonderful man, very loving, very caring.
So you didn't get the height from your dad, but you did, and this will be a nice surprise to everyone, perhaps even Reggie, he did get the singing talent from his mom. So now we're going to take a moment's break, and Reggie is going to give us a moment of Rigoletto.
Not on this podcast.
All right.
No, but I was musically inclined. My mother, anybody sing in here? You know, she always taught me to sing from the diaphragm, to push out. And I had a pretty decent voice when I was younger. I had a band when I was growing up, played the Fountain Blue Hotel and stuff like that on Miami Beach when I was going to Miami Beach High. As a 16-year-old, I was making $400 or $500 a night. We're talking about back in the 70s.
Yeah, I wouldn't be saying that too loud in front of my band.
in the 70s, you know, we do proms and dances. $400 or $500 a night. I was like, this is crazy. But you know, it was what it was.
So you, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. You became a cop in Miami.
Yes.
what the hell were you thinking?
Well, you know what? I graduated, went to USF, and I said, all right, what am I going to do? There were no jobs, pretty much like how it is now with graduates. But I was like, what can I do? And there was my next door neighbor in Miami. He says, hey, they're hiring at the police department. And I said, why are you telling me? I'm not doing that. Well, they've got a bonus program. You sign up, you get $10,000. They'll pay you while you're in the academy. And I was like, wait a minute, how much? You know, recent college, you know, grad, 10 grand in your pocket and get paid. So I said, well, you know what, I'll try it. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. It was, I saw the best of society and I saw the absolute worst. And just when you think you're losing faith in mankind or humankind or the humility of people, then all of a sudden you come across somebody that has done something for someone else that didn't really have to. And it was a tremendous learning experience in helping me grow as a person to see that and to be involved with that. It took a toll on my body. I started developing anxiety attacks because I slept maybe 4 or 5 hours a night because I worked midnight shift. So I'd work from 7 o'clock to 7 in the morning. We worked 10-hour shifts, 4 days on, 3 days off. But I was in court as soon as I got off from a 10-hour shift, then go to court for 3 or 4 hours, which I was making double time at that point. And it just started to take a toll on me, and I was like, got to find another profession. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
When I read that you had been a cop, I was thinking of a fellow named Gary Hess. He used to be the police chief in Indian Shores, mm-hmm. out here on the beaches. And when I was correspondent for the St. Petersburg Times, right. years ago, I went on a ride-along day with him, spent an entire shift with him, and he said to me, it was a very quiet day on Indian Shores. And he said, and then at the very end, there was a convenience store robbery, literally 5 minutes before his shift ended. And he said, literally, he says, that's the way most days out here are. It's 7 hours and 55 minutes of sheer boredom and then mm-hmm. 5 minutes of sheer terror.
And that's when an officer has to constantly, I mean, you trust me, they're human beings. You get 5,000 calls, and it's the cat in the tree, and the wife screamed at the husband, this, that. The most dangerous calls are the domestics when they go to a house where there's violence going on, or traffic stops, especially the shift that I worked. I worked midnight, so stopping cars at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning in dark streets, unlit, walking up to a total stranger that you don't know who they are or what they may have. It's very, very dangerous. And you can do 5,000 stops. Mm-hmm. 5,001 will be the bad guy with the gun waiting for you to walk up to the car to blow your brains out. And you have to constantly be on guard for that. I go to restaurants now. I always sit with my back to the wall. I go into convenience stores. If they have a bunch of papers and ads up in the windows where I can't see in, the first thing I do at the door is look. I look for the clerk to see what his eyes look like. If he's standing there like that, I know we got a problem. But nobody does that. You go in and get your soda or your water and run back out to the car. I'm always cognizant of my surroundings, you know, always, everywhere I go and everything that I do.
One more question about police work. You got the Officer of the Year Medal of Valor in Miami. How did that come about? What led to that?
Young and a go-getter. It was my rookie year, and I had just gotten off of what they call FTO training, field training officer, where a veteran would teach you the ropes and everything. So I started riding in my own car. Stopped a guy on 42nd Street, which is the main and northeast 2nd Avenue. So they're checking out the car, and I look a block over, and I can see a wooden structure, and I see smoke. I said, Sarge, I'm going to run over here and check this out. I don't know. There might be a house fire or something. He says, go ahead. So I go around the block, come around. By that time, fully engulfed in flames, a two-story wooden structure. And I'm like, oh, my God. How did, you know, so I run up to the door, and I hear some voices. I'm like, there are people in here. So I went in, and they were half asleep, some of the smoke and stuff. So I started dragging out, just grabbing them by their underwear and shirts and just dragging. So I drug out about five or six people from the bottom floor. And they said, you know, somebody's upstairs. I said, I'm looking at these flames, wooden stairway. Okay, phew, run up the stairs. Grab three or four more people. Their heads kind of got banged up because I was just pulling and yanking, got everybody out of the building, and it just totally burned and collapsed. What I didn't know, and we became very good friends later, but what I didn't know is that Joan Fleischman from the Miami Herald had seen the whole thing.
Oh.
And I ended up on the front page. Hero cop saves, but I mean, you kidding me? And that, you know, that just transpired into...
Of course, you got to say, now, this is a typical complaint people have about journalists. She stood there and watched him drag these people from the building, took notes, didn't run up and say, oh, how can I help you? She stood back, observed, and let him do all the work.
Which worked out fine. Yeah. She might have gotten in the way.
But that, I mean, that's a common complaint about journalists.
Yeah,
that, you know,
I compare that to the people that are shooting documentaries on the Serengeti Plains. You see a poor little baby antelope, and you know the tiger's gonna get away. No, you gotta let nature's.
It was gonna happen.
It's gonna happen eventually, whether you're there or not. You gotta let nature take its course.
So let's use that for a minute. We'll go another minute or two, and then we're gonna take a little break. But tell us a little bit about you. Got your first TV job at WPEC in West Palm.
West Palm Beach.
Why switch to that?
Well, my last year on the police force, I was the public information officer, basically giving statements to the media. And a news director at Channel 7 said, you want to be a reporter? You do very well. And that's, no, not really. You know, he says, no, you'd be pretty good. And where it really hit home, Dwight Lauderdale was a big anchor at Channel 10 in Miami at WPL for 35 years. So there was a terrible shooting and four or five people dead and all of this. So I said, hey, I'm rushing out. I'll give statements to your reporters when they get there. So their live truck was there, but there was no reporter. The reporter wouldn't be there. They were stuck in traffic. So Dwight says, Reggie, just put the microphone on, and I'll ask you questions, and you just show me and tell me. Well, I guess I did so good that he told me, he says, you need to leave and go into, because the live shot that you did just there with no training is probably better than half our staff. I mean, I was descriptive. I was like, if you look back over here and blah, 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 now come back over here and you can see how the bad guys went. And just conversation. And it went very well. So I put together a little demo tape and I got hired at Channel 10.
Any rookie mistakes that you made?
Always.
Yeah,
always.
Anything good?
I'm trying to remember. It was one really bad one.
Yeah?
I got what they call the deer in the headlights look. You know, like, and I... When we have scripts in front of us, but we also have the teleprompter that we read. So, you know, I always keep hard copy just in case that breaks. That if you see an anchor do this, oh, the teleprompter just broke because they've got to keep up. Well, what I didn't know, I rushed out onto the set my first year at Channel 10, and I had this hot story, and I was ready to go. I was already nervous, you know, young rookie reporter. And John Wilson says, and Reginald Roundtree is here to explain what happened. And he turned to me and says, well, John, and I did like this. There was no script in the prompter. So I did the... Luckily, they went straight to the story, and I regrouped on the backside. But that was the only really like, oh, my goodness, something happened. But it's live television. Anything can happen. Anything. I mean, the little earpiece that we wear, if you've ever seen the movie Broadcast News, it's true. The producers are talking to you. Things are changing. They'll tell you, all right, don't read that. Go to the next story. We've got the live shot now of breaking news. Just go ahead and talk. Tell them, blah, 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 blah. I got shot on Central, blah, blah. And it can go like that. It can change at any moment. But you know what? I've been doing it so long now where that doesn't faze me anymore. Because I remember as a young anchor going out, oh my goodness, you know, the live shots are dead. The reporter's not on the scene. What are we going to do? And I'm like, I'm driving the bus. Just follow me. And just ad-lib through. And then if something really bad happens, you just look in the camera and you say, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be right back. That gives you 3 minutes of commercial time to get your ducks in a row.
And how did you make the transition to anchor? Did that happen when you hit Tampa, or was that while you were in Tampa?
While I was in Tampa, I came in as a general assignment reporter. And I'll never forget Mel Martin, who was the news director that hired me. It's really interesting what he said when I walked in. And I was the first person that he called. So I came up. And he says, hey, you want to walk around, blah, 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 blah. Took a look around. Said, ooh, great place. West Palm Beach to Tampa, Market 48 to Market 13, big jump, nice pay. And he sits me down and he says, you know why I have you here, right? And I says, yeah, for the reporting job. I says, okay. He says, did you notice anything in the newsroom? I says, like what? So the typewriters and people working, what are we talking about? He says, does that newsroom mirror our society? I says, well, talking about black people, white people, blah, 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 blah. He says, yeah. He says, I like balance. I says, so what you're telling me, he says, let me cut you off right now. What I'm telling you is that I'm ready to hire you because you are a good reporter that happens to be black. He says, you're the first person I've called. I'm a new news director here. You're the first move that I'm going to make. Here's the money. Here's the traveling bonus, clothing bonus. Ooh, I was like, my agent calls and says, well, wait a minute. Channel 13's made an offer. Wait a minute. I got a bird in the hand. I'm not going to wait for the book. Let's just see. But I ended up, I liked what he said because he said he would, he says, you don't know everything. I'm going to train you. He says, after I finish working with you, you'll be one of the best. It's going to be tough because I'm a hard egg, but you will be really, really good if you come here. And that's what sold me on coming.
That's a great story.
Because general assignment reporters, street reporters, never ascend to main anchor slots. That just doesn't happen. You usually come from another market and, oh, we're going to bring down, or they bring them from Chicago, Cleveland, New York, the big anchor to the little guy running around in the streets and doing getting out alive and jumping from cars in the water. But I've been around so long that I've talked to probably every mayor, every congressperson, every dog catcher in town. I've just been here and I've made myself exposed to all segments of our community, which is extremely important.
Had you noticed when you walked in the door there that the station was that white?
I didn't. But it was of a major concern on his part, which was really interesting, you know. And it's, does it matter? He says, yeah, it matters to me because I want our staff to mirror the people that we're reporting to.
I honestly cannot recall because, I mean, I've been here since before you got here. I've been here 30 some years. I was born here.
Yeah.
Were you the first African American anchor in Tampa Bay?
Main anchor.
Yeah.
And when we say main anchor, we're talking about the evening shows, the big shows, 6 and 11 o'clock.
I remember 13, there was an African-American woman. Denise White.
Denise White.
Yeah.
But black male, the black males. Male anchor.
Okay.
And the lead, you know, first one. And I never forget. Oh, who was the Tribune? I'm getting older.
TV reporter?
No, the critic at the Tribune.
Walt Belcher.
Belcher.
You're welcome, Walt.
Walt's a sweet guy.
Walt's a good guy.
Even though he worked over there at the Tribune and ate, he watched Channel 10. But anyway, I remember when I got promoted, and that was one of his big things as far as big things that happened in television, and he had me right at the top of the list. Hmm. That this was significant, and television been here, 40-something? To be the first to ascend to, but I paid my dues. You know, it wasn't, nothing has ever been given to me. I've always worked hard and worked the streets and done good, unbiased reporting. And it comes around, because I thought I was kind of hitting a glass ceiling for a period of time, because I was on weekends for a number of years. And our numbers on the weekends were here, but during the week they were here. And the general manager then, Steve Baldwin, who's now like out in California working at KCBS big, he was like, I need to make a move. So you got to be careful what you wish for, because I remember sitting there and he says, we're going to make you the main anchor. And I was like, what? My knees for shit.
Were you ever made uncomfortable in this market being that main anchor, being a black man?
No. I think that there is a phenomenon of sorts when you are, number one, qualified, when you're good at what you do, and when you have earned. I didn't feel any pressures. I deserved to be where I was. Now it was up to me to maintain that level of journalistic ethics and professionalism in order to maintain and keep the job, which, you know, I'm not perfect, but I've tried to do the best I can do.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And this is Bob Adelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with Reginald Roundtree, co-anchor on 10 News. I lost track of where I was. There's my blooper. Co-anchor of 10 News on Tampa Bay's CBS affiliate, WTSP. And we're recorded live at Elevate Fitness, 6001 Central Avenue in sunny St. Petersburg. We'll be right back after this musical interlude by Johnny Zoom Hi-Fi Show. And this is an original song called Get in the Car and Jet. Hit it, Johnny. Johnny Zoom Hi-Fi Show, playing original song.
Right.
Well, this is Bob Adelman, and you're listening to and watching the Mr. Media interview with Reginald Roundtree, co-anchor of 10 News on Tampa Bay's CBS affiliate, WTSP. Yes, I can say it correctly. Recorded live at Elevate Fitness, 6001 Central Avenue in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. And we just enjoyed a musical break by Mr. Media's own one-man house band, Johnny Zoom Hi-Fi Show, playing original song. Thank you. It's my own personal Jay-Z. We'll come back for a couple more questions, Reg. Mm-hmm. What are some of the issues that are facing local television, not just in Tampa necessarily, but
across the nation?
Yeah, around
tremendous the tremendous challenges due to we have less staff doing more work, and you just have to accept that you're not wearing just one hat; you're wearing two or three. But it's—I guess you could go to any company or business around here, the same thing is happening there. You used to do one job, pack this, pack that, and that was your job. Well, because of the economic conditions, businesses are having to tighten up and do what they have to do to stay, you know, fiscally sound. So it's like, well, not only do you pack, but you also have to ship and make. And it's just, that's just the way it is now. We've gone to what they call MMJs now, multimedia journalists, where the reporter actually shoots the video, comes back, writes the story, edits the story, and then prepares himself to go live to front the story. That's like three different jobs there, but that's how these kids, when I tell them graduating from school, make sure you know how to shoot and edit, not just be a good reporter, you have to be a good photographer too, because that's half the jobs are going to go to those kids that can do all of those in order to get into the business. And the face of the business has totally, totally changed from the heydays of the 70s and 80s when news anchors were making outrageous subsidies. But there was a lot of money to get. The pie has gotten a lot smaller because you have competitions from cable stations now, cable programs. Actually, some nights I see the ratings numbers. The Simpsons have a higher rating number than some of our news stations at the 6 o'clock hour.
Wow. Oh, you know, at least the Simpsons pretty hot.
Yeah, they must be really, really hot.
Now, when we started talking, you mentioned about that you're out in the community a lot. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned it too. Is there more pressure on news anchors, news reporters, if you will, to be news personalities because you just...
Well, you're a figure in the community.
Yeah.
And I've begun to understand, and I kind of got it years ago, everywhere I go, everything I do is in the public. I've always been one. People approach, I'll be sitting down eating or whatever, want to take a picture. I'll stop eating, take a picture. Want an autograph? Make sure I sign the autograph. Share a kind word to people, chit-chat with them. Always open to be approached because I'm a public commodity. It's that one time that you're having a bad day, he was a real... That will never happen with me, even if I'm having a bad day. I always take time to talk with everyone. And when I talk with them, I look them in the eye, find out who they are, find out their name, and give them, you know, give them time. You know, you have to do that. If you're not a people person, find another job. Because that's, I'm basically still a public servant. Not in the form that I was as a police officer, but people call me with 10,000 problems a day. And if there's some way that I can do or try to help or promote or whatever, I'll do everything within my power to do that.
Are there things that you cover, you being the staff at WTSP, cover on the news today that you would not have covered 10 or 15 years ago? And are there things that you covered when you started that you're no longer paying attention to?
Well, I'll tell you what. Our general manager, Elliot Weiser, came out with a group of things or, how do I say, rules and guidelines. At the very top, we will not show any bodies on the news at 6 o'clock. If SWAT or somebody is doing a tactical thing, like remember the big shootout where Hank Earl Carr killed the officers and then he's up there at the gas station. Some stations were showing the SWAT guys ducked down by the door. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to get these guys killed because the guy had a television in there. He's watching. We will not show stuff like that. We will not name juveniles unless they're charged as adults for a real serious capital crime. We're just not going to name them. And there's certain guidelines that we are going to change the way we cover things and do things, and that's how we do now.
The 6 o'clock news is still obviously it's dinner
show of record.
It's a show of record. It's dinner time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I just did an interview with a. There's a connection here, believe it or not. I did an interview with a guy who's a crossword puzzle editor, and he wrote this book about the history of the crossword, and he said that the New York Times in particular had something called the breakfast table test, and if the crossword puzzle came into them and it had clues that had any words that related to disease mm-hmm. or death or right. Any of that kind of thing, mm-hmm. That would not pass because they didn't want people to get sick
right.
over the crossword puzzle mm-hmm. while they're having their breakfast. And, mm-hmm. Is that the same type of thing we're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. It basically, what it boils down to is just plain common sense. Yeah. All right. It's a shootout, and I got three bodies laying here. Not going to show that. It's dinner time, plus kids are home, stuff like that. Even if you give a warning, we want to warn you, the video, it's still not enough time. It should not be on. Now, as soon as we're done and the networks come on, they'll show bodies hanging off of bridges but that's the networks. But we are not going to do that locally.
So you don't follow the if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, that used to be.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of crime that makes the newscast, but you know, like I said, our general manager says we're going to do things differently. You know, the whole world is not doom and gloom. Everything is not bad. And there have been some newscasts where, I mean, five of the top stories were shootouts and wife killed her child and this and that. He says, that's just too much. You know, what value does that have for, you know, unless there's something connected like with the shooting in Wesley Chapel? You have a former ex-veteran cop that allegedly gets angry about texting. Before the movie hadn't even started yet, they were still doing previews. If you've been to the movie theater, everybody's going until the previews, and then they have the little turn your phone off, whatever. When the movie starts, then everything's out. But I think it just kind of agitated, and one thing led to another, and words were exchanged. But it all come out in the trial. But what a tragedy.
Well, and this is a situation, if I don't know if you guys are all aware of this, that Reggie got involved in raising money for the family.
Yeah, we do that, and I go to my social media is so powerful in news right now. Any one of you could take your phone, your iPhone, or whatever you have. You could record something and say something. It'll probably end up going viral. I mean, if it's something really, I mean, anyone has the capability of reaching the masses with this little device. But what I did, one of the local pizza. West Shore Pizza said every dollar from every pizza we sell from here to the next 3 days, we're going to give to the widow and the 22-month-old child left behind. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go buy a pizza. Went and bought the pizza, and they're eating, and they started taking shots of me eating the pizza. I said, what? I said, Reggie, you just... I said, wow, yeah, I did. I did my little part, you know, or whatever. And then the pizza was, like, really good. Mm-hmm. White cheese. White cheese, spinach.
Wow.
Tomatoes, basil, and bacon. I know you know that.
No.
I was all over that pizza. But I only ate two slices. Moderation. Moderation.
I have to. I'd sit down with you for two slices of pizza. Yeah.
But you know, I'm a Southern boy. I eat bacon. I saw the bacon. I was like, oh, man, I am in the right place now.
All right, so one more question before we let you go. You've been very patient with your time, and I'm sure everyone has enjoyed listening to you talk about things. You're a young guy. I mean, even though you've 25 years here at the WTSP, have you thought about beyond this, what maybe, you know, what you want to do beyond this?
It's funny you asked me that.
He's just about to announce he's retiring.
No. It's funny you asked me that. I think people go through life, and there are stages. When I joined the police department, it was a big jump for me, a challenging job, and I've never been one people don't really like change, especially like when you're changing careers or changing a direction or whatever. There's a fear factor. But I remember joining the police force, and during that time, a lot of cops were being killed. One of which was I lived on 41st Street, Miami. Nathaniel Broom was a police officer that was killed, I think, 2 months before I actually hit the street, and he lived on 42nd Street. Mm-hmm. So, all right, that was a challenge, but I enjoyed the job. It was exciting, and I did a lot of good. Then I had an opportunity to go into television news, something I'd never done before. So imagine saying, all right, I'm going to change careers. That's like you going from banking to I'm going to be an architect. I hadn't really studied to be a journalist or anything like that, but I took the chance because I believed in myself. You know, so, well, I'm halfway decent looking. I can speak well. Maybe I got a shot at this and see what happens. And I did it. Now I've gotten to the point where I feel other challenges coming. And I will say that it's probably in the field of entertainment. I'm not going to say exactly what, but something is afoot. And I like challenges. I love challenges. And this is something that I study what I'm thinking about and look at it and research it and check it out. I don't just jump. I take a calculated jump. There's risk reward for everything that we do in life. High the risk, maybe higher the reward. But if you don't take the chance. One thing I don't want to be put into the ground or whatever my kids do if I get cremated or whatever. I don't want to be done with this life without having tried to do everything that I want. I don't want any regrets or, man, I shoulda, I coulda, but no woulda, coulda. He did. And that way I think you live a more fulfilled life where you haven't given up on yourself as far as an opportunity to not better yourself, but to face those internal challenges that are pressing. I mean, like with what you're doing here, look at your years as a journalist. And this is
throwing it all away right here, right now.
But you know what? It's cutting edge stuff, what you're doing here. I mean, I was fascinated. I was like, heck yeah, I'm down there. Let me go and see. This is fascinating.
Well, and I think I know where you're going with the future, your career. And I got to tell you, Johnny Zoom, you were actually looking for a new wedding singer. Yeah, see, he's holding up his guitar. He's ready for it. Got that voice, you know.
Oh.
It's probably a couple of bar mitzvahs, and bar mitzvahs we can book
there
in this
you
room.
Go.
You know.
I have been to many bar mitzvahs. I went to high school at Miami Beach High. My nickname when I played on the football team was Roundberg.
Roundberg.
Reggie Roundberg. I had my little Yama. I've been to Temple. I had my Yama. Oh, I was hanging out. And what's the? I love this. I think it's during a religious holiday where dreidels.
Hanukkah. Sure.
Hanukkah. You know,
like I said, there's a room full of bar and bat mitzvahs.
Let me tell you, it's funny. I connected with some of my old high school classmates. Many of them are up in New York now, and everything is just really funny. The stories but I think we all grow when we look at other cultures, other religions, and where people come from and what they do. I think it just makes you a better person, a better understanding person, you know, no matter what your faith or what. I'm a man of faith. You know, we may not agree or have the same faith, but at least we believe in something, you know, and I think that just makes us a better person to get out and meet and do and everything. It's really interesting seeing me in Temple with my yarmulke. I was right there.
All right. Well, on that unique note, folks, you can find Reginald Roundtree, co-anchor of 10 News on Tampa Bay's CBS affiliate, WTSB.
You got this down, Pat.
Nights at 6 and 11.
6 and 11 o'clock.
You can look him up. You can follow him at the station's website, WTSB.com, as well as its Facebook page, which I believe is facebook.com/WTSP 10 News.
10 News. Or just say you go to Facebook, type in Reginald Roundtree. I'll be
just skip to Reggie. Skip the station. Did we say that? Are you recording this? And you're on. So you're on Facebook. You're on Twitter.
On Twitter.
All that stuff. You can pick up on his next conversation with Bubba the Love Sponge on Twitter. Reginald Roundtree, thank you so much for joining us. I'm
so happy to be here, and it's good to see all the folks turn out and come. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Johnny Zoom, you got something for us. That is the great Johnny Zoom Hi-Fi Show, led by Johnny Zoom, our house band here at Mr. Media. And I'm back now to talk with Jennifer Pearson, the owner of Elevate Fitness and our host for today. First of all, thank you for having us.
You're
it's
welcome.
A great place. I think we've all enjoyed being here. So, Jen, this is an unusual approach to fitness, so maybe we could start. You could tell us a little bit of what is vertical fitness and for whom would it be kind of a smart alternative?
Well, vertical fitness training is really for everybody. We work by getting you up off the ground. So when you're on the fit wall, you engage more muscles at one time. So you get up off the ground and we work you out. It's a more efficient training modality because more muscles working at one time means less time for you.
And I should tell people that I've actually seen you climb up and down these things.
You
closed up some screens for us and you climbed up on top and it's just crazy to watch. I wish that I was quite a bit younger.
Well, we currently teach clients 7 to 74 years of age, so it really is for everybody.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. Do I already need to be pretty athletic to try this?
I have elite athletes that train here sometimes, to firefighters, to people that have rehab therapy issues that come post-rehab therapy and work with us. And I have Weight Watchers clients, to moms who just want to come in and get a workout after they drop their kids off at school or on their way home from work.
Is there anything that would prevent someone from doing it? Any health conditions that you would advise someone not to, that this isn't right for them?
Well, if they have breathing issues, we would ask them to go slower. They would spend less time on the wall. If they have compressive issues, we would just modify for them. It's really case dependent on people. So we just talk with them. We have them fill out a health questionnaire to make sure they don't have any physical issues that we need to know about. I actually work with a Paralympic athlete who doesn't have the use of his legs, and he still trains with me. So pretty much work with everyone.
And finally, any special offers for anyone who happens to hear about Elevate Fitness here on Mr. Media today?
Absolutely. Your first class is $5 if you mention Mr. Media when you give us a call. $5.
And folks, we are, again, we're at Elevate Fitness at 6001 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, Florida. Drop the gym and elevate your fitness with vertical training.
Let's get vertical.
There you go. As Jen said, your first class will be $5 when you mention you saw it on Mr. Media. And how could you not mention you saw it on Mr. Media? Look at me. I'm so cute.
Absolutely. Mr. Media is awesome. You have to come see it.
Elevate Fitness, 6001 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg, elevatestpete.com.
Yeah.
Phone number is 727-345-7200.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Thank you. And folks, for more original interviews with America's top everything, movie stars, TV stars, news people, people next door, whatever I can find, who will talk to me, really. Surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com. It's MRMedia.com. And if you've enjoyed today's show, you can subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, iTunes, and the Stitcher app for mobile devices. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can if you're in Kennett City, Florida. And follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, YouTube, and our Vimeo video channels. Thanks for joining us again today. I appreciate you sharing your day with Mr. Media. And we're going to leave now with a little bit more from Johnny Zoom Hi-Fi Show. Take it, Johnny.